Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Here in Boston, we have the privilege of living with a building that seems to make it onto every list of hated buildings. People have called it a dungeon, a fortress, a concrete harmonica, and not in a good way. Now, we know we're not alone. Almost every place in the country has one of these buildings, hated by most people, but loved by many architects. The day Boston City Hall was completed, one of the country's most distinguished architecture critics declared, "Boston can celebrate." The celebration has yet to happen, at least according to a few armchair critics we met.
I'm not being judgmental, but it looks kind of ugly. It's too jutted out. It's too angular. It's not very appealing.
It looks like you're in the business district, but it doesn't fit what we're going to go see, like at Quincy Market and all that. We're from Southern California, so that can be anywhere. It's not unique to Boston, outside the fact it says Boston City Hall.
Concrete. That's it. Just a big mass of concrete. Very industrial and not a lot of love put into that building.
Let's take a trip to some hated buildings. Our guide is Brian Sermon, a graduate student at Boston University who teaches a popular class in reviled architecture. And Brian, Boston City Hall reaches number one on many people's lists. Why?
It does for a couple reasons. First, I think people find the appearance of it to be unappealing, unattractive. That style of concrete architecture has really fallen out of favor recently. Also, people perceive that it doesn't represent Boston. When people think of Boston architecture, they tend to picture the Back Bay or Beacon Hill with genteel red brick buildings. This is not that style of architecture. And also, in recent years, it's really been a neglected building. The city hasn't put a lot of effort into maintaining the building well, into scrubbing some of the grime off of that concrete.
That might be because the mayor would like to get rid of it. He'd love to level it and move City Hall.
Exactly. And people pick up on those cues from the leaders. And so when the mayor says that City Hall is an awful building and that we need to sell it or demolish it, that has far-reaching pernicious effects on the reputation of the building as well.
The building is top-heavy, comes down in a bit of a V, and it's an example of something called brutalist style in architecture. Tell us about brutalism.
Well, first I should say that the term brutalism, it originated as a descriptive term. It comes from the French béton brut, which means raw or unadorned concrete. Now, of course, it's a pejorative term, a derogatory term. But the brutalists emerged in the middle part of the 20th century, the late 50s, the 1960s, and they were really revolting against the style of architecture that was popular at the time, which was basically the glass box. This was an abstract architecture. You could have, whether it was a private residence or an office building or a government building, you would have a glass box for your space. And the brutalists said, this isn't what we should be doing.
We don't need windows.
Well, it's not the windows, but that the building should somehow be expressive of the function of the building, of the function that it's supposed to serve, and also evocative. It's a building that you can't just pass by, that you can't ignore.
In San Francisco, there's the Museum of Modern Art that's often makes these ugly lists, and the Denver Public Library. Both of them were completed in 1995. But maybe the most reviled that I see often on lists like this is the Experience Music Project in Seattle, which was founded by Microsoft billionaire Paul Allen, designed by Frank Gehry. I mean, he's one of the best in the country. What happened?
Well, apparently Gehry's inspiration for that building was a broken guitar, a smashed guitar. But it has that same kind of wild geometry that we see in a lot of Gehry's other projects that actually has incited criticism even for some of his slightly less hated buildings, the Stata Center here in Cambridge at MIT. It leaks. It's seen as not functional by some. There were vast cost overruns, and some critics have pointed to this wild geometry and called it, say, the Dr. Seuss building, as one of my students dubbed it. So it's just seen as excessively showy, excessively complex.
the buildings we've been talking about so far, the guitars seems to be representing the broken guitar, but many of them are representing a style of architecture. But then there's the kind of building that's trying to look like what it is. Mm-hmm. Best example of that is in Newark, Ohio, and it's the home office of Longaberger. And taking one look at the building, you know what they sell. What is it?
It's baskets. yes, and this that was exactly the reason that the architect designed the building in this way. It looks like a giant wicker basket punctuated by windows that are on the same horizontal levels as the wicker strands in the basket with two giant handles coming out of the top of it. It's impossible not to know what's going on in that building when you look at it. That couldn't possibly be a private residence or an insurance company headquarters. You know what they do.
Do you think that one of the reasons why people may not like these buildings is that they often don't have anything to do with the surrounding community? As you said, the Boston City Hall is a concrete structure in the midst of beautiful brick architecture.
Absolutely. In my class, one of the things that the students first would realize is that there are a number of different reasons why buildings are hated. And sometimes it has to do with aesthetics, that they're just considered ugly. But more often than not, there's something else at play there. Either it's because of the economics, that they're costly to build, costly to maintain, costly to operate, or, as you said, because of the context, the physical context. They don't fit in some way, either because of their function. You have a parking garage, say, in the middle of a residential neighborhood that doesn't fit in, or because of the material or because of the scale in which they're built that doesn't match the surrounding environment.
Do you think there's some ugly buildings that will never move to the beautiful list, that will always stay reviled?
You know, I'm not sure, perhaps. That's one of the interesting questions about brutalism and the brutalist aesthetic, because a lot of the brutalist buildings were not designed to be beautiful. Actually, their ugliness was intentional, to set them apart, to get people thinking about them. Gerhard Kallman, one of the architects of Boston City Hall, wrote that this style of architecture necessarily did not easily appeal to the senses and that it was a difficult architecture. But at the same time, I look at what at the time it was composed would have been considered difficult music, and certainly we've come to appreciate that, or difficult painting that we've come to appreciate. So at the same time, I think that maybe in a few decades we'll become inured to the concrete brutalist style as well.
Brian Sermon, a graduate student at Boston University, teaches a popular class in reviled architecture. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
And we'll leave you with Jonathan Richmond and the Modern Lover's Ode to the people who have to work in Boston City Hall, a.k.a. Government Center.
Well, we got a lot of hard work today. We got to rock at the Government Center to make the secretaries feel better when they put the stamps on the letter. They got a lot of great desks and chairs now at the Government Center.
Here and Now is a production of WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service and PRI. Our producers include Lynn Menegon, Hitesh Hati, Kevin Sullivan, Emiko Tamagawa, Catherine Gorman, and Alex Ashlock. Our interns are Connor Gillies and Emma Jean Weinstein, and special thanks to former intern Alex Johnson. Our technical director is Doug Sugertz, Chris Ballman is the managing editor, and the senior producer of Here and Now is Kathleen McKenna. I'm Monica Brady-Myrov. Robin Young will be back on Monday. Have a great weekend, and please join us again here and now.
Calm down a while. Sir, that's the only way the center is ever gonna get better. So we gotta rock a non-stop tonight at the Government Center, where they put the stamps on the letter and then they write it down in the ledger. Oh, tonight we'll make them feel all right. Oh, tonight, what you say, man?
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software. Find over 200 job openings at mathworks.com.
PRI, Public Radio International.